Hello, my name is Nathan.
I'm Ray Luciano.
And this podcast is about just like the military, mainly the Army, but we're probably going to touch up on other branches like the Air Force and possibly the Navy. But the main one's going to mostly be about the Army. And Ray, I know that you know a lot about the Army because you served in the Army, correct?
Correct.
Exactly what branch, or like what division?
I started out as 19 Delta, which is a cavalry scout, and I went to Special Forces and retired there.
Okay. So for like the scouts, you said, right?
Scouts. Yeah.
Yeah. What was like their main, job?
Their main job is basically to be up front of a moving force. So it's just a group of people, and if you can, it kind of makes more sense if you look at old Western movies. You had one person that served in the military, and next to him was an Indian. And they would be ahead of the U.S. Army. And they would be looking for, basically, to engage the enemy. So a scout is a forward advance infantry soldier, in such an easier terms.
Okay. So basically what they would do was they'd be basically in front and make sure it was clear.
Yeah. And because you were in front, if the main force was being attacked, then you would be alerted and you would be able to call it in and know that they're coming.
Okay. And then I also know you're about the what used to be a part of the Airborne. Was that when you were a scout?
No, I was not. I did some air assault as a scout.
Okay.
But the rest of the other courses came through SF.
Okay, so you were airborne in Special Forces.
Yes, you have to be.
Okay.
So once you sign up for it, then there's mandatory courses that you will go through. There's an assessment, and there's the Q course. And then you go through additional courses. You pick your language course. You pick your air assault. They'll send you to air assault. They'll send you definitely to airborne. And then just multiple classes from there on.
Okay, so do you have to be SF to be airborne?
No, you can be airborne through any other unit.
Okay.
But in SF, it is a requirement. You cannot move forward without it.
And for like airborne, since they jump out of planes, is it the Army that has their own pilots or is it the Air Force?
The Air Force, actually. The Air Force does a lot of their aircrafts, but the Army... Special Forces normally also jumps out of helicopters.
Okay.
So if it's helicopters, normally, I'd say 95% of the time, it would be U.S. Army pilots that you'd be jumping out of the back of it.
Okay. Oh, so it's like the cargo helicopters.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
So like when it came to jumping out, were you like ever like, really? I have to jump out of a plane or like a helicopter right now?
Well, the helicopters are probably the ones that give you greater concern because it opens, the rear belly of the helicopter is open. Mm-hmm. So you get to see it long before you jump out. So if there's going to be any butterflies, you'll see it then and there. And the other way, if you're coming out of an aircraft, which is called a fixed wing, if you're coming out of an aircraft, you don't see it because you walk up to it. And then there's the door, and the minute, split second, you step out of that door, you get sucked right behind your aircraft. So it doesn't even give time to even realize what happened.
Okay, so it's like, because I've seen videos of, like, people jumping out of planes, and it's like a, I forgot, you told me what it was called once, like
a stick. Stick is a group.
Okay, and it's basically just a line of men attached to a cord, and you basically walk out of the plane.
And you walk out of the plane. You don't really realize it.
Yeah.
You know, you just put your right hand over the right shoulder of the other individual, and you just keep walking out.
Yeah, okay. And was there ever, like, a possibility of you hitting another person while going out?
No, but it can happen, and it has happened, but normally no.
Okay.
You have the jump master. The jump master is the one that's making sure that everyone goes in enough time intervals where that would not occur.
Okay. Have you like witnessed any anybody like parachute not functioning correctly?
Oh yeah. We had one individual, but I was not there. So we had one individual that actually his ripcord did not open, and basically he was slamming against the aircraft at full speed. And the first time he hit the side of it, he was knocked out. Yeah, there was a person by the name of Suarez, and he turned around and realized that because the tension was so tight on that particular ripcord that he went and jumped out, putting his life at risk, and he hit the other guy, which caused his parachute to deploy, and the person did land unconscious. He was totally unconscious. So upon the fall, he hurt himself also.
Yeah.
But he sustained some severe lacerations to his neck because of that.
Okay.
Non-deployment of that.
Have you ever had severe injury while jumping out of planes?
Yeah, I just had one where it was a night, what they call zero illumination, which is the darkest night of the month, and you jump on that. And basically, you have some mobility on these parachutes, but not total. And I was coming down, and I saw a group of trees, which you want to avoid. And then I saw like what I thought to be a road, which was a road. And then near that road, I was trying to avoid as best as I could. And then I hit what's called a culvert, which is an indentation on the ground made out of concrete so that water drains can pass through.
Okay.
And basically one leg hit the grassy area, and then the other one hit the culvert, and then the whole impact fell upon my right leg, snapping it in three places.
Oh, okay. So was that about how fast do you go when you land?
About 12 to 15 miles per hour.
Okay, so
sometimes faster.
So it's not like really much of a nice calm landing.
There is no calm landing. And then, of course, if you're coming down fast, you're coming down hard, or you come down uneven, or there's wind at any given point, that just adds to the impact.
Okay.
So, yes, everyone will get hurt.
Yeah.
Eventually, if you do this for long enough, you will get hurt. You'll snap your legs. You will harm your knees. You'll harm your ankles. You'll break your foot. It's just bound to happen.
Yeah. And so if you can, what was like some of the big things you did in Special Forces?
Really?
Like, what were like one of your main jobs?
My main job was I was not a long gun. And a long gun is those guys that are snipers that hit long targets. That was not mine. Mine basically was to go into towns and look for people. If we were looking for local nationals that we were concerned with, I also did counterterrorism. I performed a lot of nation building. In other words, I'd go to different countries and try to help their military develop to a certain standard. And I also trained a lot with numerous other countries in exchanges for tactics and so forth.
Okay. So it was more just like find a person or like help a certain group of people.
Yeah, find one. When you find, we were actually grabbing.
Oh, okay. Snatch and grab.
Yeah, it wasn't like we were meeting them or anything. We were chasing them. And
okay.
I, out of three missions, I succeeded in two. And one, I kind of succeeded, but not necessarily.
Okay. So, were you really ever, like, because you're in the Army, were you ever really interactive with, like, any other branches besides the Air Force?
Navy.
Navy?
Navy is the biggest one where we're assigned with, and that's because they have the SEAL teams.
Okay.
So the SEAL teams and the U.S. Army Special Forces work really, really close together. We rely on the Army for helicopter support, and we rely on the Air Force for aircraft support. The Air Force also supports us with weather, meteorology.
Okay.
So they're the ones that do a lot of the weather patterns for us. We don't rely zero on the Marine Corps. But normally, if it's ground troops, it's going to be the Navy.
Okay. So you never were, like, in with, like, the Marines or, like...
Zero Marines.
Zero? Okay. And then you once told me about how when you were, I forgot exactly where, but it was like a long walk and there was a truck and you and your guys would always try to like flag down a truck and try to hop onto it or something.
Yeah, it was one time where I was deep in some sugar canes, and we were hiding in those sugar canes for a couple, for about a night, a day, a night, a full night, and a few hours into the morning. And we heard rumblings coming through, and we didn't know what it was, but we heard it coming fast approaching to us. We didn't know what it was, and it kept getting closer and closer and closer. And we had decided at that point that if this thing got any closer, that we were going to go in and engage whatever that object that was heading towards us. Mm-hmm. And as they kind of got closer and closer and closer, we come to notice it was personnel from the United States Army 10th Mountain Division. And they were lost. And they thought that we're taking a shortcut would get them back to their base, but they realized they almost came upon us, and we could have engaged with them and have them hurt, and would have been a friendly fire incident.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know we were in those sugar canes, and we had no idea that they were lost trying to find a way out. It's just a coincidence that probably never happens, but we came very close to engaging them. And then we took a ride with them because we were waiting for nightfall to leave, but now that they were there, we knew how to get back. So we took a ride with them, and in the back of it was two Humvees. I actually hurt my arm really bad because those guys didn't know the terrain real well. And when you're bouncing in the back of it, I bounce and bounce and bounce, and then hit in a bad way against my M4 and the side of the Humvee, which is made out of metal, and I had this huge bruise that lasted for about a week or so on my left arm.
Oh, okay.
But I was fine.
Yeah. So were you ever, like, I don't want to say concerned, but, like, wondering about, like, some of the missions you ever received, like, way that you sure we're going to have to do that, or, like, do we have to do it this specific way? Were you ever, like, questioning the mission?
No, I don't think I would question a mission. I think in Special Forces, the average person is a little bit older and has a lot of experience, real-world experience. So everything gets tabled and discussed, mm-hmm. and then someone will be in charge of making the right choice of what to do and how to do it. But all of us will kind of buy into it. And if we continue to disagree, then someone will make a decision, and then we are all forced to buy into it.
Yeah.
But we've always knew at times that there were things that were going to happen, that some of us were going to get hurt. And you do something called risk analysis, risk management. We would do that. And sometimes we were spot on. Some of our guys, they get hurt. Some of them died. And some got hurt so bad that they had to leave the military because they couldn't function. Mm-hmm. And it's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah. Was there ever a time where you kind of, you knew that you had to do something and you did it and you regretted it later?
Yeah. You're always going to second guess yourself at any given time. But you do the best and you make these decisions based on the information that you have at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in those situations, you can't continue blaming yourself. Special Forces units have psychiatrists assigned to them that they know these individuals long before they get into the situations. They work with them during the situation, and they work post with them after the situation. So you have a bond with the psychiatrist, you have a bond with the surgeons and the doctors and everyone else. So do you regret a lot of things? You don't really regret because you're thinking, well, I didn't know how the outcome would have differed.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best you can do with the information that you have. But you always worry about guys getting hurt, and you're wondering if you could have done something different, if you could have perhaps avoided that. But in reality, you can't.
Okay. And then do you feel like your military life, or like just being involved in the military, ever really helped you after the military?
Oh, it did. It did significantly. When I got out of the military, I was retired. I immediately went to the local unemployment office to find a job, and they immediately looked at my military resume. They looked at my military record. They were impressed by it, but I think they were impressed not because I was in the Army. I think they were highly impressed because I was in Special Forces for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They looked at that. They started. I talked to a veteran that was in the Army in Vietnam, and he was an infantry soldier. We started talking things and just interchanging information. We became good friends, and I started working immediately. About 2 to 3 months after I walked in there, they offered me a position. From there on, I think my skill sets, my talents, my decision-making mm-hmm. process, my ability to have conflict resolution have all played a role. My ability to speak multiple languages, my ability to think ahead, to always be playing chess, to be 2 or 3 steps ahead of every decision, to realize not to look back, not having ambiguous or shortchanging myself or shortfalls, but thinking this is the route we're going to go and we're going to take it. So all that leadership comes into play. And I think as I've continued to work, it's evident it helps. And it's got definitely pushed me along a promotion track that most people will take 20, 30 years to get. I got there in 15.
Okay.
In 15 years.
And then before the military, did you know that you were going to plan on doing that? Or was it just like last minute kind of, oh, just going to go do it?
Well, for me, it was a decision based on economic factors.
Okay.
I was raised poor. I was raised without a father. I was raised without a mother being there available to me. I was raised alone. And I knew that the only way that I could get out of poverty, of lack of education, was for me to go forward and join the military. The military sent me quickly taught me a few valuable lessons, one of hard work, one of integrity. I started going to college. I graduated college. I used my college degree towards the military advancement, and I used it for my current civilian advancement. So did I know that's what I was going to do? No. But once I decided to do it, then I never looked back.
Okay. And then what are some, like, main, you feel like, some main, like, things that you get from the military now, after? Is there any benefits you get?
No. What do you mean?
Is there, like, any benefits you get?
Afterwards?
Because, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, for
some. Well, for jobs, you can always apply for veterans preference. And if you're working in a local government, city government, county, federal, state, a lot of military retirees normally go back to work for them because they're valued in that system, in federal jobs. That's one. Number two, you also get a military retirement, so you get that also available. You also get the VA, and depending on your status on when you get out of the military, your VA, you could have these fabulous, great, great benefits, or it could be very little, depending on how many years of service and the type of, if you're a combat veteran, so they have different types of stages for them to evaluate that. In my situation, I'm ranked number one because I meet every criteria that the VA could possibly want. I meet every single one of them. So my medical, my vision, it's 100% free. It's everything included to the day I die.
Okay. So basically, because of all the hard work you put in the military and all this extra that you did, this is the way of the military really paying you back towards that.
Yeah, and I appreciate everything they do for me. You know, it's one of those things. What you do when you're there is determined upon you. The old Army used to have an old slogan, be whatever you want to be. And it's true. If you just want to do 3 years, 4 years and get out, fine. If you want to be slothful, they won't deal with that. But once you get out of the military, then you can go and live a slothful life. But if you want to give it everything that you have, you dedicate yourself with hard work, with learning, of the always craving for knowledge and putting that into principle and application, then the Army will take care of you long after you retire. They do value their veterans that are retired. They do value their combat veterans. They do value the disabled veterans. So if you can do it, do it.
Okay. Well, that's going to be wrapping up today's podcast. And thank you.